Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean.
Hi, this is Scott.
This is Pat.
Hey, I tell you what, today's program, exciting times. We have a tax expert going to be joining us, talking about some of the changes in the tax law and how it may impact you.
Wake the kids and call the neighbors. No one wants to miss that. We're also going to talk a little bit about cryptocurrency as well as take callers. One of them, extremely interesting. Do I have enough money to retire?
Yeah, so stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Can't get enough of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to listen to the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for joining us today, both myself and my co-host here. We're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself. And we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And whether you got an advisor you're working with now or several advisors or just doing things on by yourself, whatever the case may be.
Or you're just starting out in this
restarting
journey. When I say starting out, often people, I've seen it, I'm 55 now. My friends are coming to me asking me about retirement planning advice. And what I find curious is that many of them actually have saved for retirement. They're just now trying to line everything up to make sure that they can pull the trigger in the next 3, 5, 10, 15 years.
Make sure that they're able to.
Yeah, they've saved. They knew that, many of them knew that, you know, you saved at least 10% of your income. But there's been so many competing factors. I was bicycle riding with a bunch of my friends a couple weekends ago, and that was the topic of conversation, which is my kids left the house. Now I think I'm going to pick a retirement date in the future.
Do you ever say, you know what, I appreciate this is my day off and I'd really rather not think about these things?
Are you kidding? I'm happy they'll ride their bikes with me. If you spend any time with me, I'm just happy they're around me.
It's like I have friends that are professionals of whatever they do, and I try to be cognizant of the fact that when I see them, it's their time off.
Mm-hmm.
So run into the dentist. Hey, I just.
Well, that's nice.
Like a Christmas Eve service coming in with my family.
No, literally, you didn't.
I swear to you, a guy grabbed me at the door
and said,
asked a question of me, and I looked at him. It's Christmas season. I'm supposed to have a good attitude and all that, but I wanted to punch. I said, it's Christmas Eve. I'm here with my family. Can we talk about this another time?
And then he probably realized it was.
Well, I don't know. I just turned away and walked away. I wasn't going to have that in conversation. Anyway,
so
I don't know why.
If you have a financial planning question, if you're planning for retirement, if you're 3 to 5 years, if you're a week away from retirement, or you've retired in the last year.
You know what, Pat? It's interesting because at Hanson McLean, we've helped thousands of people transition into retirement. Look, the best time to start planning is not 3 weeks before retirement. I can't tell you how many people have come in here and we've said, if you were even here a couple months ago, we could have done a couple
things. We could have done a couple things.
But usually if you were here a few years ago, we could have done some things. So if you are like 3 years away from retirement, now is the time.
Yeah.
Not 3 weeks before retirement or 3 months before retirement.
And if you have a question, you can call the show.
Yeah. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program here at Hanson McLean. That's 1-888-2-HANSON or 888-242-6766. And frankly, if you're one of those that thinks, I've got this question, but I really don't want to be on the air because I'm really not that comfortable, which we totally get. You can send us a question to questions@moneymatters.com. Questions@moneymatters.com. Each month we answer a question on our blog. So we're happy to take that question that way as well. Anyway, 888-2-HANSON to be part of the program. And we're talking with Mark. Mark, you're with Hanson McLean.
I just wanted to tell you a little bit about myself to start out.
All righty.
The bank and I own four rental houses, and and plus my residence as well. And then my wife and I have some 401k money as well. So about $750,000 in 401k. And my wife and I are both 49ers in both age and fans.
Okay. What happens next year?
They have to change the name of the team.
We'll see. Yeah. Anyways, my question is for emergency fund. I guess it's a couple fold. The first thing is how much, the first question is how much do we need primarily? We've got about $30,000 in our emergency fund, but is that enough? Is it too much? I don't know.
Well,
also
what?
Should I be calculating off what our income is or what our expenses are? It's one question. And also, do we both, if my wife earns money in her job and I earn money from our rental houses, do we need to duplicate our efforts on our emergency fund being our
this is a good question, because oftentimes you'll hear, you need 3 months of income or 6 months of income for an emergency fund.
I've heard up to a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's really an emergency fund, like when financial advisors talk about it, all that's really designed to do is to make sure you have cash to meet your expenses should something happen to your employment, right?
Yes.
Either because of you get laid off, you lose your job, you got a health issue, can't work, whatever.
But oftentimes it's nuanced. So where does your wife work? Does she work for a municipality or the state?
No, she works for Delicato Vineyards, actually.
And so you've got these rentals. If your rentals were providing you with a lot of income each month, maybe you wouldn't need much at all in what, quote unquote, emergency reserves.
And the reality is,
but if your rentals are taking a bit of cash from you each month, even when they're fully leased out, then you need some emergency. But I'd also look at this not just kind of an emergency reserve for your family, but what working capital do you have for those four rentals? Should two of them be vacant at the same time, or three of them be vacant at the same time?
Yeah. And so
that would be a bigger concern than I would have.
So you probably need more than 30,000.
Someone skips out and destroys the place.
If you had $100,000 in the emergency fund, or we'll call it working capital, that wouldn't bother me at all. Even the 30,000 doesn't bother me as being too little, because you have $750,000 in your 401k.
So you're not going to have the homes foreclosed upon.
Yeah. You might have some tax implications in getting at it.
It
wouldn't be the best way to get it, for sure. But
if all else fails, we've got a home equity line of credit, too.
Yeah. The problem with home equity line of credit, they could take them away. So I'd try to get that 30 grand up to at least $50,000.
Given the rentals.
Given the rentals. If you didn't have the rentals, I wouldn't worry about it. The biggest question...
Are you asking this question because you're thinking about buying more property and you're wondering if you can take those dollars, or what prompted this question?
Well, I paid off one of the rental houses. So even without paying the rental house off, I was already positive cash flow.
Okay.
So, and now that I paid it off, I'm even more positive cash flow.
What percentage, if you look at the rentals, what's the debt to equity ratio there? In other words, let's say
the total value of the rentals is.
Yeah, and what's the debt on them?
I would say I'm more than 30% or less than 30% debt.
Okay. Oh, beautiful.
And what do you owe on your home?
Nothing.
Okay. And what's the cost of money what's the average cost of money on these rentals?
About, let's say, 3.5-4%.
Listen, I get
I don't care what
Mark,
you have.
Do whatever you want. Not going to matter. You've done great.
Yeah,
you've done great. Technically, you should have $50,000 to $100,000 in
But the, what's they, a, he's done
the
great.
Average, the average American, he's, I don't care if they're 29, 49, or 79, does not have a financial portfolio like you've got.
Yeah.
Right? So when you hear about some of these, what's what you need, and I have a feeling that if suddenly, and it sounds like your job, Mark, is working on the rentals?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So I have a feeling if suddenly your wife lost your job,
you could turn yourself into a handyman tomorrow.
But you'll be fine. You don't have a mortgage. You've got rentals that are cash flow positive with very little debt on it.
Yeah, don't worry about anything, Mark. All right, worry about stuff. Okay. Just don't worry about having.
Don't worry about emergency reserve.
Emergency reserve.
Yeah, worry about making sure you have the right tenants.
Yeah, yeah. Worry about your children and how they act, and like I do.
Good luck, Mark. You sound like you're doing great.
He does great.
I know. My daughter, a few weeks ago, went back to college. Well,
by the way, I got a disclaimer. Sometimes my children listen to this. I love my children. I'm proud of all of them.
And my daughter, she goes to school. We live in the Sacramento region. She goes to school outside of Portland. And she was home, and then I helped her pack up her car, which there's like not another room for anything, although she does have a big dog in there. Lab mix is what she said was. It's like a giant pit bull.
You should just be glad that dog didn't land at your house when she...
Where do you think the dog was night I'm helping her pack up?
But not for the school year. Yeah. It very well could have landed at your house for the school year.
But you're talking about worrying. It's like, and she gets up the next morning at 5 o'clock to drive up, and I hate it.
Oh, just worrying about her?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm a mature man. I mean, you think I know.
But I remember this last winter when she was driving up there and there was skid outs on the pass. And I think we were
in the studio.
Freaking out.
Good reason.
Yeah.
She got turned around. She's a all-wheel drive. She got turned around.
That's scary.
Too icy. And she called me. She was nervous. Car slide.
Should be nervous.
Yeah. That's what I said. It's about turn around.
You.
I go.
You'll stay in a hotel.
That's what I said. Here's my credit card. Go to a hotel. Nothing nice, of course.
Yeah.
Low cost.
So a hotel with something with a number in the name and not a four, like the Four Seasons.
I don't think there's a Four Seasons in Redding, California,
no.
I guess. But I'm just.
But like budget six?
I think it's budget eight.
Was it budget eight? I just remember I saw this hotel. It was called Microtel. And I thought, there is absolutely truth in advertising there, where you're actually advertising that you're really small rooms.
Work perfect for me.
I'm a little guy.
I don't need a lot of space.
You're a little guy. The bathroom's about the size of the bathrooms on an airline.
It's like a motorhome shower. Take care of all business.
All right. Well, enough of that. Let's actually get to the call.
888-2-HANSEN to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
We're in the Bay Area with Jack. Jack, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Hi, Jack. We're doing great.
Good. Hey, I got a question about an index-based annuity that I have. And I know everybody tells me that I shouldn't be in them, but I am. And so here we are. But there's a rider on one of them, an income rider, that I can draw. And I pay an annual fee for that. And I can't get anybody to give me an answer, at least that I can understand, as to whether or not I should start taking that money rather than leaving it on the table or just try to cancel it.
What about the person who sold this to you?
Well, you know what? I've called him a couple of times, and I just hit his voicemail, and I haven't gotten a call back, and I've emailed him.
Do you want him to call back?
I've been in touch with him. Yeah.
Tell him you have more money to invest.
I've been in touch with him. I'm sorry? Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, he knows. He knows my situation pretty well because I've actually dealt with him on this issue and one other issue. So I kind of think that maybe there's something
wrong. When you started and you said, I have this equity index annuity. I know no one tells me I should have one, but I have one anyway. One of the problems with them is the compensation structure of the supposed financial advisor who sells them to you because they get an upfront commission. Had this person been working on a fee for service, they would have called you back right away. I mean, our office, we have a four-hour, all phone calls are returned within 4 hour policy. But things don't go to voicemail. And part of that, we make sure our economics are aligned with servicing our clients, not selling products. But anyway, that's the situation you're in.
So, Jack, how old is the annuity?
It's 5 years now.
And what do
it
you...
It was 5 years at the beginning of this year.
And what's the company that issued it?
Equitrust.
And how long is the surrender period?
The surrender period is 'm gonna do you're gonna ask me a technical question like that.
That's all right. What do you
I'm still in it.
What do you
probably have
another 5 or 10 years.
Sorry. What? Oh, yes. I think it's like 14 years.
14 years.
Holy smokes. And what do you believe that the writer does for you?
Well, it's supposed to provide me equity. I mean, income for life. That's what it's called, an income for life writer. However, I'm drawing an RMD from that now. I have been for 5 years. I'm 75 years old. So... And RMDs are part of my annual income. It's not a matter of cash flow or needing the income. It's a matter of...
Here's what I would do. Here's what you're going to need to do, Jack.
Not pay something else for it.
That's correct. Yeah. You're going to need to sit down with somebody who's going to... And you're going to bring in that contract, and they're going to have to dig through it to learn it. Because every annuity, these equity index annuity contracts are different. Someone, a bright, educated person, certified financial planner, I would think certified financial planner, probably someone who's had some experience in insurance in the past that can understand this and give you some straightforward advice. Because every contract's different.
Yeah. In fact, year to year, from company to company, they're different.
Correct.
So you how much money did you put into this?
Initially was... there was a bonus involved, so it was like $86,000.
All right. Yeah, you need to. You absolutely have to sit down with someone that is a disinterested third party.
Yep. And to review the contract.
And to review the contract.
And give you the right kind of answer.
That's all you can do, because even the gentleman that sold it to you, may not
even understand how they
understood how it worked.
You don't need a lot of licenses to sell equity index annuities.
Yeah,
you get a. I don't even know if you need a high school degree.
Oh,
I'm not kidding. You don't need a college degree.
Well, I know you don't need a college degree. I don't know whether you
insurance
need
insurance license.
Yeah, it's an insurance license. Do you need a?
You take a week course.
I have no idea.
It's not a. It's not a big.
So that's really your only option, Jack. Because Eve, you need a disinterested, qualified third party that can actually crunch the numbers to give direction.
Yeah,
and you might find that. You're just stuck in it.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
So appreciate the call.
You know, it's interesting. It's 70 years old. Someone sold him a product that you can't get his money out until...
He's 84?
84. So if you want to join Hanson McLean, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's go to Colorado. Talk with Dave. Dave, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for joining us, Dave.
I am 53 years old. My wife is 50, and we have one child. Have roughly $600,000 in our retirement accounts combined. And I have a bank of accruals that I have to take a disbursement on from accrued sick leave at the end of this year. Should total about $16,000. My question is, is it better to put it towards a Roth or just go straight into my 457 plan?
What's your combined income?
This year, it's about $125,000. Next year, it is going to jump to about $160,000.
Well, with the new tax laws, there's a chance... You actually need to crunch some numbers here, because if you are in the 12% tax bracket, which the 12% tax bracket for a married couple's income is about $100,000, if you can remain in that 12% tax bracket and have this go into Roth, that would make the most sense. But if it's going to push you to the next higher number, and I don't know if it's 23, I forget exactly what that number is, Pat.
Yeah,
it's still a big jump. Then you're going to want to have it go in your traditional 457.
So
you're going to need
your borderline. So who does your taxes?
I have myself the last few years.
And when do you need to make this decision?
Well, I have to take the disbursement prior to the end of this year.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Perfect.
I also will have to take the same disbursement next year in 19 prior to the end of January.
So here's, and the reason I said perfect is we don't have any software. The new tax law software isn't out yet. So November of this year, you want to do a pro forma tax return for yourself. Some of it with you taking that $16,000 as income, and some of it not.
And then you calculate what the difference is.
And then you, and then, so the difference is whether you put it, and are you able to direct 100% of this into your 401k? Like, boom?
Yes, into my 457.
Yeah. 457.
How much money do you have outside of, how much money do you have outside
retirement accounts?
Retirement accounts.
In cash, about $120,000 in a simple savings account.
Are you contributing to Roth IRAs today?
No.
All right. So my gut would here. First blush, I'd say do Roth IRAs for you and your, for your wife for 2017. You've got before April 15th to do that. I would look at just funding the Roth's IRA, and my gut's going to say, when you crunch the numbers, you're going to find that you're going to be better off putting this in your 457 this year. Clearly next year.
And Dave, do you have a 401k and a 457 available to you?
I have both, and I contribute to the 401 is 4% with a match from my employer of 4%. And then I do an additional 10% into my 457.
Yeah, well, you're asking the right questions.
Yeah, yeah. And so my question is why does it make sense to actually put more money?
Well, next year when his salary has a big increase, I would look at saving a lot more.
Yeah, you would do that. You might benefit from sitting down with a financial planner and looking at
outline
this.
With
because
the
what you have years. Is you have the ability to put money into a 401k and a 457. The question is should you? You've got a fairly decent. I'm assuming you work for a state or municipality.
I did.
You have a pension coming to you, a defined benefit pension plan as well.
I do not.
Oh, you do not have
state
one.
State of Colorado.
I do. Yeah. It is not a defined benefit plan.
Are you changing employers next year?
No.
Okay.
You want to sit down with an advisor because you may need. You may want to increase your contributions significantly.
I mean, a couple things, just based on this call, Dave, a couple things I'm thinking. One is along with Pat, increasing your contribution, particularly next year, because you've got quite a bit of money saved, but if you kind of plan out what your future needs are, it's not really a lot for someone your age at your income level. Secondly, if you get the money saved outside of retirement accounts, you should have been contributing to a Roth, quite frankly, if this is your objective to save money for retirement. But it's not too late for last year. You still can do that. So I'd look at funding Roth IRAs. And our gut says you're probably going to be better off taking these dollars and having them directly into your 457 so you get the tax deduction. But again, we're not going to know.
And how old is your child?
13.
Yeah, so we need to figure all that.
Yeah.
The calculation as well. So those are the things to be thinking about, Dave, and wish you well. Appreciate the call. Thanks a bunch. We don't have much time until our next break here. So let's just bring up Bitcoin again because
we get asked a lot about Bitcoin.
We talked about it in length a few shows back. I actually got it. We received an email from someone who they were in some sort of Bitcoin club or something. He was like the president of the Bitcoin club or cryptocurrency club or something. And he picked on me. He challenged me to a debate, a public forum, where we would have a debate on Bitcoin. And he thought it'd be good. He thought maybe he can rally a bunch of people to come show up at this thing.
And
I politely turned him down. I might not even politely turn him down. I might not have answered the email thing. Well,
what would you debate?
I don't know.
Right? And Bitcoin is the one that gets a lot of the headlines. But it's estimated at this point in time, there are almost 2,000 cryptocurrencies, 2,000 of them. And the ones that get the headline are Ethereum, Bitcash, Ripple, Bitcoin, right? We can't forget how bubbles work, right? We can't forget how bubbles work. And there are bubbles that you could look back historically, the Great Tulip Bubble. You could look at
The tech bubble.
The tech bubble. You and this
It seems so similar because it's the blockchain. And don't confuse. For whatever reason, the media tries to lump them together like Bitcoin is the blockchain. It is not. Bitcoin is a currency created from the technology of blockchain. Is blockchain a game changer? Absolutely.
Yes. But many
feels like the early stages of the internet, frankly, in the blockchain. I don't totally understand it, but I understand the power of some of the applications
of the blockchain
and how it could certainly impact trade and contracts, etc. But just because that is a phenomenal technology does not mean that these cryptocurrencies at the prices they've ran up to are going to continue going through the sky.
And Bitcoin in particular has been as high as over $19,000 recently and as low as 10.
Yeah, I don't even know where it was at today, but it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter.
Anyway, just be careful. We're going to take a quick break. We'll take some more calls when we come back. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number. This is Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSEN. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McClain.
And if you want to join us, you got a question for us, love to take your call on anything financial, retirement planning questions, anything along those lines. To join the show, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And let's go to Folsom, California, home of Johnny Cash's Prison Blues. Jeff, you're with Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for joining us.
I'm calling on behalf of a friend who approached me last week about a community property decision regarding a CalPERS pension account. She is in her early 40s and works in the private sector, while her husband is in his late 40s and in the public safety sector. Unfortunately, the two of them are going through a divorce. Her husband expects to retire in his early 50s with about 25 years of service in his public safety job.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been married for more than 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
She approached me about which of the following two options that CalPERS gives her is the best choice for her. And this is out of my expertise by far.
Okay.
She does not want to take a distribution. And I asked her what the two CalPERS choices were that were available, and she gave me a 10-page brochure, which seemed to offer two options. One was a separation of the accounts now, and whatever assets she kept in the account in that separation model would apparently earn about 6% interest until the time she withdrew them.
Can we slow down one second? Are we talking about a defined benefit monthly pension, or are we talking about their 401k or 457? Because it could be either.
Or both.
But I believe we are talking, I don't have firsthand knowledge. I believe we're talking about a defined benefit.
Yeah.
Okay. All righty.
What's the second option?
The second option is what I'm going to call the time rule formula, where the assets would remain in the CalPERS account until she retired, and then she would have access to those assets. It seems to me as though the biggest difference between the two is that one of them would allow her to not have access to any bought-back service time and would ignore her soon-to-be ex-husband's asset or earnings in his final 12 months of service with the state.
Yeah, but she may not have access to that anyway.
Okay. And then the second model seems to allow her to have access to bought back service time if her husband did that, and would perhaps be influenced by his final 12 months in.
Got it.
In his job. So the question is, yes, which one of those is the best two for her?
So let's start this. Did they buy any airtime or service time at the point in time? Any point in time?
Not at this time, but apparently he filled out some paperwork.
Oh, he made an election.
Going to buy some.
He made the election. Which one allows her to participate in the
election? You're going to have to crunch the numbers.
Yeah, but which one allows you to participate in the service time election?
That would be the time rule formula, which is where the account assets stay in a single account at CalPERS.
And how old's this guy?
He's late 40s.
Okay, so she won't be able to.
He's a safety worker.
Yeah, so I dealt with this recently. She can't get to those dollars until he actually retires. Under that formula.
Correct.
And is there going to be a quadro filed on both pensions?
Yes.
That is what I would recommend.
Yeah.
Because they're in two different types of pensions.
So quadro
is a qualified domestic relation order.
And
gives them rights to each other's pension.
Do they have the money to buy the airtime?
I don't know the answer to that. My gut feel is that they will have the income to buy that at some point in the near future.
So the answer to my question is you should absolutely crunch the numbers, and it's the same number to CalPERS one way or the other. I would be more inclined to have the ability to want to buy that airtime than not.
Okay.
Especially assuming, is there money in 401ks? Does he have money in a 401k or 457? Do you know?
I don't know the answer to that.
So we're kind of flying blind here with our answer.
Sorry.
So
you want to take the option that's going to yield her the maximum benefit.
There we go. But
correct.
But correct. Because the airtime, and I'm surprised they haven't gotten to that election yet. They closed it a number of years ago, and they had filed an election by a certain date, and then they were supposed to process through. That should be happening pretty quick if they're not in the process of it now. I'd be inclined to participate in the airtime if given the option rather than not, just because it was such a screaming good deal.
Right.
All right. And for the rest of the listeners out there, and thank you for your call, Jeff. For the rest of the listeners out there, it was only a good deal if you're not a taxpayer in the state of California, the airtime. If you were, in fact, a taxpayer in the state of California, it probably wasn't that good of a deal for you because the benefits that they allowed the state employees to buy back were very, very rich.
It's not really buy back. It's more like buying forward.
Yes. They were very, very
rich. Can I throw in some more money and you can pretend like I worked additional years?
And it's nothing. If I was almost every state employee that we have as clients that came to us and asked about the airtime.
Oh, I remember some having to like
fight with them to get them to buy it.
Because the guarantee was so high.
It was like 8%.
Yeah, with a cost of living on top of it.
It was so great. And that's why I'd be more inclined to go with the airtime if, in fact, that is allowed for this person.
Yeah. And it's, you know what, Pat, I think it'll be interesting to see over the next 10, 15 years. Actually met a couple the other day. They had moved to Connecticut. And I said, Selma again? We recently moved to Connecticut. I said, nobody moves to Connecticut. I mean, Connecticut's in tough shape right now.
Plus, there's way too many trees in Connecticut. Have you ever been to Connecticut? There's trees everywhere.
There's a couple states and some cities to be watching. Mm-hmm. Connecticut's one of those. Illinois is one of those. That something's going to break as far as there's just not enough money coming in to pay out all the benefits that were promised.
Those are states. There's a couple cities that you should be watching.
Yeah.
Detroit, Chicago.
Hartford, Connecticut is one of the top.
Stockton, California.
Still.
And Hartford, Connecticut is if
you worked for a private sector, your pension's guaranteed by the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. So in an event of an insolvency, it pays out benefits, but there's caps on it.
Whereas?
In any sort of public, thus far, there's been no cram down on pensions or any reduction. Are we trying to make some prediction? Not necessarily. But if you're retiring and you've got a government pension of $60,000, $80,000, $100,000, $120,000, $150,000, and you're relatively young, for planning perspective, I would plan that there could be some reduction of that in the future. Maybe it won't happen.
Yep.
But
it could.
It could. And you'd rather be planning for that.
Like
any other type of investment that's providing of income, you'd want to say, how likely is this to continue to pay?
Why did they move to Connecticut? Your clients?
For a kid.
Oh, that makes sense.
Actually, their daughter was in school, and then their daughter dropped out of college after they moved there.
If you'd like to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, love to take your call to join us. It's 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. And let's go to the Bay Area and talk with William. William, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, thank you.
What can we do for you?
Do I just start up? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm a retired military, and I also work full-time right now. My wife works full-time. She'll be retiring at 67. She's 64 right now. Got to get her into that. And I'm hoping to retire at 62. And the thing is, we just sold our house in California, paid off our retirement home we've been working on for 10 years because we don't have a 401k or anything like that. We got two IRAs, but they're pretty small. But between Social Security and my military and her Social Security, we're hoping to have like $4,000 a month.
Okay. And where are you moving to?
In Nevada.
Where?
Up near the Reno area.
And you have a home paid off there?
Yes, sir.
And what's your question for us?
I was wondering if there's anything I'm missing. I mean, we've got two IRAs. The total between the two of us is like $35,000. I was just going to pull like $300 a month on each one of those.
And do you have a military pension now?
Yes, sir.
And is your wife 100% beneficiary of the military pension?
When I pass, she gets like 60%.
Okay.
And where do you work now?
I'm on base at Travis Island down here.
But you're civilian?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Contract.
So
got it.
The only thing different...
And are you renting today in California?
Yeah, we're going to rent here for another 2 years until I can retire. And by that time, she'll be able to retire on Social Security, too, if she wants to. She said she can work. She can't stop working. She's one of those kind that just won't quit.
Well, that's a good thing, though.
Yes, sir.
The only thing I would caution you about is I wouldn't count on any sort of a distribution from those IRAs.
Right. I was just going to use them as a supplemental just in case we needed it later.
I'd leave that as a safety net.
I think another safety net, supplemental, look at later. I would think you'd be too young at this point, but at some point you could use a reverse mortgage
on that the home up in Nevada. But
I'd wait till you're in your 70s.
I would not start a distribution from that IRA at all. I would do my very best not to touch that. You don't have a much of a safety net at all. And while your income is consistent and you don't have any market risk, there are things that happen in life. And that's why, you know, that last $35,000, I would not take a distribution. And even if I were to take a distribution, you said $300 a month, which actually turns out to be about a 10.5% distribution, which is way too high. Way, three times higher than it should be. So don't take that.
And if your wife wants to keep working, then that's the supplemental income.
That's your supplemental income. And you want to keep your wife working as long as you possibly can. I just think that makes a lot of sense.
For a lot of reasons.
For years.
But yeah, there's no better income than spousal income. So that's what we like to say. I think you'll be fine.
I plan on working around the house because we got a pretty good piece of property up there.
Where in Nevada? You said outside Reno. Where?
Silver Springs.
Oh, beautiful.
It's actually not too far from the Gigafactory for it.
Yeah, beautiful area.
Try to get a job there.
Beautiful area. So yeah, there's lots of hiring in Nevada. So appreciate the call.
Yeah, thank you, William. Appreciate it.
Well, we're going to have a... you know, it's an interesting time, Pat, with the tax law change.
Let the games
and
begin.
I was actually quite surprised that we got a tax bill done last year, because, I mean, it's kind of, there's things I like about it and things I don't like about it. I would imagine most Americans feel the same way about it. There's some things I like about it. I personally felt that the corporate rate needed to have a little more parity with the globe, because it was hurting us, and we're seeing the response from corporations
so far.
But I would have loved to have seen some more simplification.
There was none.
If anything, it
There was the standard deduction going up.
All right, so what they figure what a lot of Americans are going to be able to take advantage of that. But it just seems like complicated, particularly for business owners with pass-through.
Pass-through. I mean, what? Let the games begin.
Yeah. Anyway, so we thought it would be good opportunity for us to have an expert on tax matters join us, and so we've got CPA joining us in today's program. And our guest is Bill Holbin, and Bill is a managing partner of the well-known accounting firm, CPA firm in Denver, Holbin, Hay, Lake, Balzer, CPAs, and he's going to talk with us. He's got over 25 years of experience providing tax planning and consulting services. Bill, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Well, Pat and Scott, thanks a lot for having me. I'm looking forward to this discussion.
Well, good. So you've been a couple generations. Were you around doing tax during the Tax Reform Act of 86? I was around. You were around, you know, but were you a professional at all?
I was practicing, and so this is a back-to-the-future tax law for me. And
so you were practicing CPA back in 86, which was a major. And if someone's really young, they don't even know what we're talking about. But
that's exactly right.
But for many that are kind of approaching the retirement age, they do remember the Tax Reform Act of 86. How similar is this to that, and what seems really different?
Well, what this new tax act does is basically puts us back to the place where we were before the 86 tax act. The 86 tax act pretty much killed off regular corporations, which tax accountants refer to as C-corps. It pretty much killed off regular business tax C-corporations and shifted everything over to the LLC or partnership environment. And so that's the environment we've really been in since 1986. This new tax.
And these are what a lot of the pass-through entities that people hear about in the news and the media and whatnot.
That's right. That's right. And the new tax law is going to make those old regular corporations viable again, although it's going to be very beneficial to many, if not most, of the pass-through entities as well. So this is a big deal for businesses.
So you believe that the formation of C-Corps will actually increase under this tax law?
We absolutely think it will increase under this tax law. We're looking at business operations that have complicated situations. They typically have three or four entities, and we're now looking at whether or not those organizations ought to be regular corporations or C corporations instead of pass-through entities and be able to take advantage of the 21% tax rate that applies to regular corporations.
Got it.
And what are the major changes that are impacting, I'm not going to say the typical American, maybe the typical hardworking saving American? Someone who's professional who saved a few bucks.
Right. For individuals, it's tough to do much planning. We think it will probably be beneficial to most individuals. It kind of depends on how much you earn and how you earn it. For a typical American taxpayer who earns money on a W-2 plan, they will see some benefits. The standard exemption has doubled to $24,000. So there's no itemization necessary to get that $24,000 write-off. The problem is, along with that increase, the personal exemptions, which have been roughly $4,000 per personal exemption, have disappeared. And so a family of five, for example, with W-2 income of a large amount, $250,000, $300,000, might find that they don't need to itemize deductions because they'll now get the $24,000 standard, but they've lost $20,000 in personal exemption deductions, and so it's it's hard to predict how much they'll save. Tax rates went down a little bit, so there should be some savings.
You know, that's an interesting point, because we hear about the increase in tax credits, child tax credits, but there are families that will now be phased out of the child tax credit and lose out the personal exemption. So it's not like the increase in the child tax credit made up for the loss of the personal exemption.
Yeah, and that child tax credit in particular is sensitive to taxpayers' income, and so it phases out, but not until it reaches a pretty large amount. So that's going to be beneficial, but in general, the individuals are going to see less benefit than businesses should see, even small, closely held businesses that a taxpayer might have.
But Bill, so for the average American, other than putting money in their 401k, and maybe because they lose the itemized deduction for mortgage interest expense, maybe that, you know, as I've been telling people, pay down your mortgage if you're close to the standard deduction, and max out your 401k, and pretty much that's pretty much the planning opportunities under this tax law.
A W-2 employee.
Yeah, it landed on you. It is what it is. There's not much you can do about it. Is that a fair statement?
It is a fair statement, and that's good advice you've been giving your listeners.
Well, thank you. But on the offhand that you're a self-employed or a contractor.
There's a lot of planning that needs to go into place this year.
There, if you're self-employed, yeah, there's lots of opportunities in this, depending upon your profession, correct?
That is correct. If you're a personal service type of business.
Like except, what the CPAs are, or certified financial planners like us?
CPAs, lawyers, physicians, consultants. So a whole group of personal services things. This new law is exempted engineers and architects from that.
That was really interesting, that why engineers and architects were exempted and others were not.
So Bill, when this came down, I said to Scott, let's watch the games begin. So if I'm looking at this and I've got an imagination, I say, you know, I own this firm and I got 50 people and we're an architect firm or engineering firm. Maybe all my marketing and administrative is done by another firm that I own as well.
Yeah. And right now, what we have yet to see are regulations that the IRS will propose and ultimately pass that will be designed to close loopholes like that, that's my prediction. But for now, that may be an effective planning strategy.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Until
it's not, right?
Yeah. And you know, the IRS is, those guys are very, very smart. they're not going to misunderstand that opportunity. And if they perceive that to be a loophole that Congress did not intend, they'll issue regulations that will close that.
And how quickly,
if it is indeed a loophole.
By the way, we're talking to Bill Holbin. He's a managing partner of Holbin, Hay, Lake, and Balzer CPAs in Denver, here on Hanson McLean's Money Matters. So, Bill, how quickly should we expect those regulations to come out? Within the next few months, next few years?
We're still anxiously awaiting a handful of regulations from the 1986 Tax Act.
Any day now, though. Any day.
So that's any funny. Day now.
Normally, I heard that they'll never really go past 32 years before they'll issue them.
That's right. That's right. So, but in general, of course, the IRS is going to focus on closing the severe information gaps as quickly as they can.
I have a dental practice. There's with a couple other dentists. We have a practice. We're looking at this. We're saying, oh, this isn't working. You know, if we establish a couple different companies, we'll be able to reduce the amount of money that the dental practice owns. We'll have these other entities or some other loophole like that they're trying to work on. Should they have some concern that a regulation will come down 2 years down the road and be retroactive to them, or what kind of concerns should they have there?
Yeah, in the way regulations work, interestingly enough, I mean, the IRS shouldn't pass anything that's retroactive. That's kind of a common sense view. From the IRS's point of view, when they come out with a regulation, they say, well, it's not really retroactive. We're just interpreting the law as it was always meant to be, and we're sorry you misinterpreted it. But so some of these regulations are retroactive based on that view. In terms of breaking your entities into pieces like that and taking advantage of it, probably the worst that can happen is that you will have expended some energy and some professional services fees to break it into pieces, and they will end up being consolidated back into one unit, and the law will apply to you as if it were one unit. And so that's probably the worst that's going to be able to happen to your hypothetical dentist.
Got it.
All right. Well, hey, it's I guess we'll wait to see what some of these interpretations are as time goes on. And it's probably a good business opportunity for most CPA firms.
Is this not good for you?
Yeah, it's a great business opportunity for CPA firms. It should have been called the CPA non-unemployment act. Or
the Full
like
Employment
that.
Act?
Yeah.
The CPA Full Employment Act.
It definitely didn't simplify anything, did it, Bill?
No, it didn't. For small business owners of all ilks, it's complicated it, and they need to be in seeing their advisors sooner rather than later. And as I said earlier, even flow-through entities now are going to be weighing how that works against becoming a regular corporation.
Yep. We already had those discussions around our hall. So, Bill, greatly appreciate you joining us today at Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Again, we were talking with Bill Holman, Managing Partner of Holman, Hay, Lake, Balzer, CPAs in Denver, Colorado. So appreciate it, Bill.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, thank you. I'm glad for the work you do. We are out of time, unfortunately. We're here every Saturday at the same time at this station. Plus, you can get our podcast throughout the week. And as a reminder, our Hanson McLean's website, hansonmclean.com, we've got a revised learning library where we've got some online tutorials, some downloadable guides on things such as 7 simple steps to retirement planning, or how to select a financial advisor, or managing a forced retirement, and more. So make sure you check out hansonmclean.com. And if you don't subscribe to this via podcast, you can do that as well. And if you're curious on how to do that, hansonmclean.com/radio, and they'll walk you through the whole steps. It's been a pleasure being with you. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.